Hey everyone, welcome back to Lex Blug. Are you ready to dive deep into another fascinating case with us today?
Absolutely. Always excited to break down these legal puzzles.
Well, today's case is a real gem for anyone who deals with contracts, whether you're a seasoned lawyer or just starting out in law school. We're talking about Pencrow Associates v. Sprint Spectrum, a case that went all the way to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals.
It really gets into the nitty-gritty of contract interpretation, damages, and that all-important duty to mitigate.
So to set the stage, we're going back to 2002. Sprint, the telecom giant, hires Pencrow, a debt collection agency, to handle all those overdue cell phone accounts.
Pretty standard scenario, right?
Seems like it. So what's the catch?
Well, the contract they signed was for a fixed fee in exchange for a guaranteed number of labor hours from Pencrow. We're talking a massive amount of hours, 80,625 to be exact.
Well, that's a lot of debt collecting.
Right. But here's where things get messy. Just a year later, Sprint decides to terminate the contract.
Why? What happened?
They claimed Pencrow wasn't meeting performance metrics. They said, look, you haven't been hitting your targets for 6 months straight. We're out.
So Sprint invoked a termination clause.
Yeah, but Pencrow argued, hold on, it's not that simple. They sued for breach of contract, and a trial court actually awarded them a whopping $17 million in damages.
$17 million, that's a serious chunk of change.
Oh, yeah, Sprint definitely wasn't happy about that. They decided to appeal that decision, and the case ended up in the 10th Circuit, which is where it gets really interesting from a legal perspective.
Okay, so we've got a broken contract, a massive damages award, and an appeal to a federal court. Sounds like the makings of a juicy legal drama.
You could say that. But before we dive into the 10th Circuit's decision, I think it's important to clarify a key distinction in contract law, the difference between direct and consequential damages.
Yeah, that could be a tricky area for sure. So break it down for us. What's the difference?
Okay, so imagine this. You hire a contractor to build a website for your new business.
Okay, got it.
They breach the contract and just disappear without finishing the site. Your direct damages would be the money you already paid the contractor.
Makes sense. You're at the money you spent.
Right. But then there's the ripple effect. What about all the potential customers and profits you lost because your website wasn't up and running? Those are consequential damages.
Ah, I see. Those are losses that flow from the breach but aren't directly tied to the contract itself.
Exactly. They're a consequence of the breach, but not a direct cause of the website itself. Now, in Pencrow v. Sprint, Sprint argued that they didn't owe Pencrow any lost profits because their contract had a clause that seemed to exclude consequential damages.
So they were trying to use this clause to shield themselves from paying a big chunk of that 17 million.
That's right. But the 10th Circuit wasn't so quick to buy that argument. They looked at the language of the contract, and well, they had a pretty interesting way of explaining their decision.
Yeah, I've heard about this. Didn't Judge Gorsuch, who was on the 10th Circuit panel, use some kind of analogy involving fried food?
He did, and it's a great analogy that really helps clarify the court's reasoning. So imagine a doctor tells you, listen, you got to cut out fried foods, specifically, no more fried meat and potato.
Okay, I'm following.
Does that mean you can't eat any meat or potatoes at all, even if they're not fried?
Whoa, no, of course not. I can still have a baked potato or a grilled chicken.
Exactly. And that's basically the point the court made. Just because the contract excluded consequential damages, including lost profits, doesn't mean Pencrow was barred from recovering profits that they would have earned directly from the contract itself, what we call direct damages.
Got it. So Sprint tried to use this exclusion clause as a catch-all to avoid paying anything, but the court said, not so fast.
Right. And I think this is a great example of how crucial it is to be crystal clear when you're drafting and interpreting contract clauses. The court basically said, look, if you wanted to exclude all lost profits, you should have said so explicitly.
So be specific. Don't leave any room for ambiguity.
Exactly. Vague language in contracts is just asking for trouble. Now, there's another interesting aspect to this case that I think is worth exploring. It has to do with this idea of fixed capacity agreements.
Okay, this is where things get even more complex, right?
Well, not necessarily complex, but definitely nuanced. In this case, Sprint tried to argue that because they weren't utilizing all the labor hours Pencrow was making available each month, they shouldn't have to pay for them. They essentially wanted to pick and choose how many hours they used.
Interesting. So they agreed to pay for a certain capacity, but then tried to back out when they weren't using all of it.
Right, but the court wasn't having it. They said, nope, in a fixed capacity contract, you're paying for the availability of those hours, whether you use them or not.
It's like renting an office space. You pay for the whole space, even if you only use half of it.
Exactly. And the court emphasized that if they accepted Sprint's interpretation, it would make certain clauses in the contract meaningless.
So Sprint tried to argue that a clause allowing them to adjust the hours meant they could just reduce them whenever they wanted.
Yeah, but the court shut that down pretty quickly. They relied on a principle of contract interpretation called avoiding surplusage. Essentially, it means every word in a contract should have a purpose.
Makes sense.
Okay.
So the court said, look, we're not going to interpret this in a way that renders entire clauses useless. We're going to assume the parties meant what they wrote.
Precisely.
Okay, so we've got clear drafting, the nuances of damages, this principle of avoiding surplusage. What else can we learn from this case?
Well, there's one more crucial element we need to discuss, and that's the duty to mitigate damages. Remember, the initial trial court award was over $17 million.
Yeah.
The Tenth Circuit ended up reducing that by $7.6 million.
Wait, why with a reduction?
Because PenCrow actually did something right. After Sprint terminated the contract, they went out and actively sought new clients to replace the work they lost. That's what we call mitigating damages.
Ah, so you can't just sit back and collect damages. You have to make an effort to minimize your losses.
Precisely. It's about being reasonable. You have to take steps to put yourself back in the position you would have been in if the contract had been fulfilled.
So the court recognized PenCrow's efforts to do just that. But I'm guessing Sprint probably had something to say about it.
Oh, they did. They argued that PenCrow could have done more to mitigate, that they didn't utilize their full capacity and could have taken on even more new business.
So Sprint was basically saying, you didn't try hard enough. Did the court agree?
No, they didn't. The Tenth Circuit actually deferred to the trial court's findings on this issue. They said, look, the evidence on mitigation was mixed, but the trial court had the chance to hear all the arguments and see the evidence. We're not going to second guess their decision unless there was a clear error.
So building a strong case at the trial level is super important.
Absolutely. This case really highlights how much weight appellate courts give to those initial trial court findings, especially when it comes to factual matters like mitigation.
That's a great point. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Let's recap for our listeners what we've learned so far from PenCrow v. Sprint.
Sure. So first, we talked about the contract itself, which obligated PenCrow to maintain a certain capacity rather than bill for actual hours worked. Then we explored that tricky distinction between direct and consequential damages, including Judge Gorsuch's clever fried food analogy.
And we wrapped up by discussing the principle of mitigation, where the court recognized PenCrow's efforts to find new clients.
And how important it is to document those efforts if you're ever in a similar situation.
Right. This case has been a real eye-opener, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not just relevant for lawyers. These principles apply to anyone who deals with contracts, whether it's in business or your personal life.
That's a great point. So much of our daily lives revolves around contracts, from leases to freelance agreements.
Exactly. Understanding this stuff can really save you headaches down the road.
Great advice. Well, stay tuned for part two of our deep dive on PenCrow v. Sprint, where we'll delve even further into the implications of this case and what we can all learn from it. You know, it's amazing how much we can unpack from just one case, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. PenCrow v. Sprint is like a gift that keeps on giving, especially if you're interested in, contract drafting and enforcement.
So let's talk about that. What are some takeaways for those of us who are, well, maybe drafting or reviewing contracts?
I think the biggest takeaway is that precision matters, right?
Right.
We already talked about this with the damages clause. Sprint tried to use a really broad term, consequential damages, to exclude all kinds of losses, but the court basically said, if you want to exclude something specific, like lost profits, you got to say it directly.
Don't beat around the bush. Just come right out and say it.
Exactly. Vague language in contracts is like a recipe for disaster. It just leads to disputes down the road. Another lesson is about how you structure those fixed capacity agreements.
Yeah, that part of the case was interesting. So make sure it's super clear whether payment is tied to actual usage or just to having a certain capacity available.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Right? You got to spell it out, you know, whether it's a set number of hours, units produced, whatever it is.
And what about that idea of avoiding surpluses? We touched on that earlier.
Yeah, that's a really powerful tool in contract interpretation. Basically, the courts are saying, look, we're going to assume that you put every word in that contract for a reason.
So don't include anything unless it has a purpose.
Right. Each provision should serve a specific purpose and contribute to the overall agreement. Remember how the court used this principle to shut down Sprint's argument about the incentive plan?
Yeah, they said if they accepted Sprint's interpretation, that whole provision would be meaningless.
Right. And courts really hate the idea of interpreting a contract in a way that makes certain parts of it pointless.
Okay, so we've got clear drafting, we've got avoiding surplusage. What about enforcement? What can we learn from Pencrow about what to do if you're facing a potential breach of contract?
Well, this case is a great reminder of how important it is to mitigate damages. Remember, Pencrow could have walked away with that $17 million award.
Yeah.
But because they took steps to find new clients and minimize their losses, that final award was much lower. And it's important to remember, they didn't achieve perfect mitigation, right?
Right.
The court didn't hold them to that standard. It's about taking reasonable steps to avoid unnecessary losses.
Okay, so what's the best way to approach mitigation if you're in that situation?
Document everything. Keep records of all your attempts to find replacement work, new clients, alternative solutions. That documentation is going to be your best friend if you end up in court.
Documentation is key, isn't it?
Always. And remember, in Pencrow, the court gave a lot of deference to the trial court's findings on mitigation. So building a strong case at that trial level is so important.
You really want to present all that evidence right from the start.
Exactly. You know, one thing that really strikes me about this whole case is how the court really focused on practicality. Like, they weren't getting bogged down in abstract legal theories. They were looking at the contract, the context, and trying to reach a decision that was legally sound and made sense commercially.
It's a good point.
It's a good reminder that contract law isn't just about, you know, legalese and technicalities. It's about facilitating agreements and making sure things are fair.
Absolutely. Well, we've covered a lot of ground. We've talked about contract interpretation, damages, mitigation, and it all came from this agreement between a big telecom company and a debt collection agency.
Which just goes to show that contract law is everywhere, right?
It really is.
Yeah, it's so important to understand these principles no matter what you do.
Okay, before we move on, I want to leave our listeners with something to think about. We spent a lot of time talking about how the court interpreted the contract language in this case. But what if the parties had just used clearer language from the start? What if, instead of relying on that term consequential damages, they had specifically addressed lost profits? Would that have changed things?
That's a really interesting question.
It makes you think about how much those little differences in wording can really matter.
Absolutely.
This case really is a goldmine for anyone studying contract law, isn't it?
Absolutely. So many practical lessons packed into one decision.
And Judge Gorsuch's opinion. I mean, talk about a masterclass in legal writing. The way he explains these complicated concepts using analogies like that fried food example, it's so clear and concise.
Right. It's not just about getting to the right legal answer. It's about explaining it in a way that anyone can understand. And Judge Gorsuch, he really nails it in this case.
It makes those complex legal arguments so accessible. So what would you say are the key takeaways from Pencrow for, let's say, law students or anyone who's new to contract law?
Well, it's a perfect illustration of how courts approach contract disputes. Like, all those fundamental principles of contract interpretation we learn in law school, looking at the plain meaning of the language, considering the context, avoiding interpretations that make parts of the contract meaningless.
It's like seeing those concepts come to life, right?
Exactly. It's not just theory, it's real-world application. And the case also does a great job of explaining those different types of damages, the duty to mitigate, and how all of that plays out in practice.
Felix, it's a great case to study for anyone who wants to, you know, really dive deep into contract remedies.
Definitely.
Okay, so we've explored this landmark case, Pencrow v. Sprint. It covers so much ground. Contract interpretation, damages, mitigation, even legal writing. And it all started with a seemingly simple agreement between a huge telecom company and a debt collection agency.
Right, which just goes to show you, contract law, it's everywhere.
It really is. And as we've seen, understanding these principles is important for everyone, whether you're a lawyer or not.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, that brings us to the end of another deep dive. I hope you found it as insightful as we did.
Always a pleasure.
And remember, keep learning, keep exploring, and stay curious about the law. We'll see you next time.